You are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. What a crazy thing to say. Can you imagine telling a bunch of uneducated, uncultured peasant ex-fishermen from Palestine that they are the light of the world? Equally absurd is the thought that Jesus is speaking to you and me, saying to us that we are the salt of the earth and the light of the world. But so he does, indicating the Christian's influence in the world. That is what we're thinking about today, that you and I are salt and light, the Christian's influence in the world. We want to think about it in three ways. First, we want to think about the notion that a Christian can even lose his influence. Then we want to have a look at the need for Christian influence in the world. And then we're going to look at the nature of the Christian's influence in the world. Firstly, the notion that a Christian may lose his influence. Both of these metaphors which Jesus uses indicate that. He says in verse 13 at the end of the verse, "But if salt has become tasteless, how will it be made salty again? It is good for nothing anymore except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men." Now, sodium chloride actually never really loses its saltness. But when it does become contaminated with other chemicals, it tends to lose its usefulness and even become dangerous. Perhaps Jesus was referring to that salt which comes from the Dead Sea. If he was, then that salt already has other chemicals contaminating it. And that once water washes away those chemicals and the sodium chloride, all that is left is just a white powder. And perhaps Jesus is referring to this when he says this white powder is actually not even good enough for a manure substitute. It's only good to be cast out into the street and used as road grit. But then Jesus says a Christian who loses something is like salt which becomes useless, or light which is hidden is useless to those who need the light. What does he mean? He means not that a Christian may lose his salvation, God forbid. The Bible consistently teaches that once you become a Christian, you are a Christian and you cannot lose what God has given to you. But what Jesus does say is this: a Christian, perish the thought, may lose his present influence for Christ in the world. As far as the need for the Christian's influence in the world, in these metaphors, Jesus points out and says something not only positive about the Christian. He says that you are salt. He says you are light, but conversely, he is making a judgment about the world. When he says that the Christian is salt, he is also saying that the world is deteriorating without the Christian's influence. You see, salt is used for something more than just to make things taste better, to put on your collard greens and your black-eyed peas, and it is good that way along with pepper. But what Jesus has in view here is that salt is used at this particular point in time to prevent putrefaction. Some of you may have seen the movie Poltergeist. In that movie, there is a scene where a piece of meat, steak, becomes rancid in only about a 10 to 15 second period. It is terribly gross, but it does point out the fact that meat, given a long period of time, will deteriorate and decay and become rancid. And Jesus Christ says this about the world without the influence of the salt of Christians, that the world cannot stop itself from going bad without a Christian's influence. The Bible points this out. The Bible points out that there is a downward trend in society, in the world, and not an upward trend of man improving himself. Things grew so badly that by the time God, at the time of the flood, was preparing to destroy the flood in Genesis 6:5, it says this: every intention, talking about man, every intention of the heart of man was only evil continually. When God's people grew worse, God then judged them in the Babylonian captivity, and we see this cycle throughout throughout biblical history. The diminishing amount of Christians in the world, and the world growing and stronger, deteriorating, although getting more powerful, until God must judge it in order to reduce it and to begin to proliferate in the world more Christian influence. You are the salt that keeps the world from going bad. That's true in history too. We can notice it throughout the history of man, as well as in current instances. However much the proponents of the philosophy of evolution want us to accept their philosophy, that is, of life forms getting better and better, and so life improving along with it, the Bible and history bears another witness, namely, that left to itself, life does not get better, it gets worse. What we are involved in the world is not evolution, but devolution. I'm speaking of the moral influence in the world. Things tend to get worse, not better. Back in 1962, I believe it was, our Supreme Court judged that prayer could no longer be used in schools. Since that time, and I read a statistical report of this in a magazine, crime has increased within the classroom, within the school. Crime has increased outside of the classroom. Homosexuality has become acceptable as an alternative lifestyle. And we have gone so far as to put our stamp of approval on the abomination of abortion and murdering children. Now, you see, things without the salt of Christian influence in the world tends to get worse. Things tend to get worse and not better. Jesus says something else here. He not only says that the Christian is to be salt, that the Christian is also light, and therefore he is making a judgment about the world in saying this: the world is in darkness. You know, that is an amazing statement in view of the fact that today we have more knowledge and data accessible to us than at any other point in history. Men could become adept in more fields of learning 100 years ago than they can possibly become today, because our area of specialization and our knowledge has become so minute and, on the other hand, complete. We have come through the industrial age, the scientific age, and we're living in the age of technocracy, the exaltation of technology and a mechanistic universe where we can send men in a spacecraft, Columbia, for commercial purposes, not just for exploratory or scientific, commercial purposes, commercial flights into outer space. We can computerize almost everything. But listen, in spite of this, for all of our computerized technology, for all of our supposed wisdom, the Son of God says this about you. Do you see how preposterous it is now? He says, you are the light of the world. Not Albert Einstein. You, Christian, are the light. There was a book on philosophy which came out not too many decades ago entitled The Condition of Man. And it talked about the condition of man. And its reviewer said this in a classroom: this book as regards analysis is very good, but it does not go beyond analysis, and therefore it does not help. Do you see? Here is a great book on philosophy. Here is Dr. Julian Huxley in England on the radio broadcasting what is the condition, the problem of man, who must confess in his lecture, I have no answer as to what the solution to man's problem is. But Jesus Christ says this, that you are the solution to the problem of man. Let's look now to the nature of the Christian's influence. We've looked at the notion that you can lose it, and we've looked at the fact that there is a great problem, that the world is decaying and the world is in darkness. But consider now the nature of your influence. I think it goes without saying to point out that in the Sermon on the Mount and in this particular passage of Scripture, Jesus is saying that you and I as Christians must be different from the rest of the world. If we are not different at work, at school, on the playground, in church, from everybody else, then we will do absolutely no good as Christians in the world. And so he says, firstly, you are the salt of the earth. The salt of the earth. What is the function of salt? We've already pointed out that one function is that salt is a preventive. Salt is to prevent decay. In the same way, the Christian is to prevent the decay of the world. Look at history again. It is true that the Christian church has had sometimes an unsalutary effect upon the world, but by and large, some of the greatest social movements have been started by and continued by the saltiness of believers. The abolition of slavery, the improved working conditions for our little children, the exaltation of the place of women and women's suffrage in the world, all as a result of Christian influence. But take it out of that great, that higher plane, and you will see too that Christians have had a salutary effect upon the world in preventing decay. Look in your own life and think about what you do daily and where you go. Here is a man who, when he comes into a group of other men, their language changes. They no longer use four-letter words. They no longer tell dirty jokes, because this man is the salt of the earth, and they are ashamed to do it in his presence. So you, Christian, is that how it is when you are present among others? There is another function of salt. It works secretly. It works secretly. What I mean by this is, we live in a day when it is very popular for the church, for parachurch organizations, for Christian groups, to make public pronouncements about politics and about morality in general in our country and in the world. Denominations and Christian groups have lobbying organizations in Washington, D.C. to make sure their principles get accepted. What I'm saying is this: let us indeed support such organizations as the Moral Majority, as Christian Citizens Concerned for Better Government, pro-life groups, and the Round Table in Alabama and throughout the United States. But let us be sure of this one fact: the purpose of the Church of Jesus Christ is to preach the gospel. And if it is to have an effect upon men, then it must be this. It must be where Christians secretly are being the salt of the earth and sharing the gospel with others and preaching that salt, who is Jesus Christ. In fact, as you look at history, you may be able to see that often when the church became most vociferous, decrying public outrages and the decline of certain elements in society that should exist, that they only grew worse, but what turned them around was this: a spiritual revival that took place. You can read it for yourself. Whenever a spiritual revival took place, inevitably a community, a church, a town, a country also initiated social reforms, moral reforms in that country. What I am saying, Christian, is let's indeed be in favor of those and give them our support, but let us not think that we are going to change the world through those organizations. We will change the world by Him who said that He is the transforming power of the world. And when you preach the gospel of Christ and He takes a heart and He turns it around, that businessman and that politician is changed positively and for good. You are the salt of the earth. Salt works as a preventive. It works secretly. Salt operates by simply being what it is. Did you notice the way Jesus has arranged the Sermon on the Mount? It's really a very logical, important arrangement. We've already looked at the Beatitudes. There we have the character of the Christian. And then we come in chapter 5, verses 13 through 16, the influence of the Christian. Do you notice that Jesus doesn't start with the influence of the Christian and then moves to the character of the Christian? He says, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, blessed are those who mourn, blessed are those who hunger and thirst, blessed are the merciful." First, you see, what you do depends upon what you are in your heart of hearts. The character, in a word, the character of the Christian's influence depends upon the influence of his character. We all know those Christians who try to be Christians, but their words are idle to us. Their rebukes, their lives contradict their communications so much. There is a fourth thing which salt does, and it is this: salt must be applied. There is a book entitled Out of the Salt Shaker and Into the World. It's talking about the salt shaker of the church. Why, if we are to do anybody any good, and both metaphors teach this, whether we're light, whether we're salt, we have to be public also in our testimony and witness. But salt also enhances flavor. Jesus said that you and I ought to be the savor of Christ wherever we are. When you leave a place, when you leave a Bible study, when you leave church, when you leave your office, when you leave your classroom, when you leave the football field, do people say of you, that person was a savor of Christ to me? He smelled good. The preventive savor of the Christian was indicated in the book Through the Valley of the Kwai by Ernest Gordon. The Japanese had a prison camp in Burma, and there were prisoners from all over the world, really, from Great Britain and all around. And these prisoners had so much pressure put on them to build a bridge over the River Kwai that by the end of the day, they were always at each other's throats, ready to kill each other, arguing, fighting among themselves. Until one day, after one work day, they counted the shovels and one was missing, and a Japanese guard lined up all the prisoners, American and British and Australian, on down the line, and he said, who took the shovel? No one volunteered. So he cocked his rifle and he aimed it, and he said, if you don't tell me who took the shovel, I'm going to start shooting each one by one. And an Argyle prisoner stepped forward and he said, I took it. And the Japanese guard came up to him, began slapping him and beating him, began to hit him with his rifle until the blood began to fall from his head. And then in one great moment, he turned his rifle around and he took the barrel, and with the butt of his rifle, he came down on the top of the prisoner's head and he dropped to the ground. But the guard continued to beat him and to kick him in a rage until the guard himself grew so tired he couldn't hit him anymore. And then they counted the shovels, and there were none missing. And these prisoners began to read the Bible and to turn to Christ. And a spiritual strength and reviving took place even in that concentration camp. How like the Lord Jesus Christ, who did no sin, who said, I'll take her punishment. I'll take his punishment. Murder me. I'll do it. But such is what you are to be in the world, Christian. You are to be the salt of the earth, as this Argyle prisoner was the salt in a prison camp. But Jesus also says that you are the light of the world. And he makes a really extraordinary, exceptional statement here. What he says, you are the salt of the earth, and he uses the word which means earth, ground. But then when he says you are the light of the world, he uses the word which means the cosmos. Someone gave me a book recently that described the sheer immensity of the cosmos. As we think of its vastness, of its almost infinitude, the greatness, the massive stars that we have, the brightness of our sun and other stars even bigger than our sun, and yet Jesus Christ makes this extraordinary, absurd statement. He says, listen, you Palestinian peasants, uneducated, uncultural, listen to me, members of the First Presbyterian Church of Gadsden, Alabama, you illumine the universe to a greater degree than the most magnificent sun set in the heavens. You are the light of the world. How is it that you are light? Jesus said this, I am the light of the world. Only insofar as you bear a close relationship with Jesus Christ will you be light in the world. Do you bear that close relationship? Are you walking in close fellowship? As the sun is, as the moon reflects the sun, you are to reflect the light of Jesus Christ. Not that people may look at you and say, oh, what a marvelous Christian, but you are to shed light in the world. You are to bring shame to those who are in the wrong. But on the other hand, you are to give the positive light of the gospel of Christ. When I was a boy, before I became a Christian, I used to watch a television program put on by Roman Catholics, and I forgot the name of it, but I remember the speaker. It was Bishop Fulton J. Sheen of New York, I believe. And I think that it had a lot of gospel in it. It must have affected me favorably. He always used to close this program by saying this, or something like it. If everyone lit just one little candle, what a bright world this would be. I think it's rather simple, but rather good advice, isn't it? Christian, will you shine in the darkness where God has put you? You are the hope, not the gubernatorial race, not our economic policy, and not Ronald Reagan. You are the hope of the world. Let us pray.